Listen, I hate to interrupt, but I actually have to interrupt because that's a copyright violation, sir. But welcome to Hate to Interrupt. I am Gulif from youtube.com/Gulif, also known as Ethan, and I am joined by...
Mick from Stop Culture.
Nick from VHS Guy.
Yeah, I should have said Nick from the Cranberries, too, because I was doing... The reason I was just singing that song is because today we're going to be talking about the 2002 Danny Boyle film, 28 Days Later, and then also the sequel to that film, the 2007 Juan Carlos Fresnadillo film, 28 Weeks Later. And then I guess also we're going to talk about how, you know, we're feeling about the new one coming out, the 28 Years Later, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Is that Danny Boyle? Is he coming back?
He is the director, and it is returning writer Alex Garland, yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
So they are reuniting after however many years.
So, wait, was he involved at all with the sequel?
I think he was a producer, and I also heard that he directed part of the opening scene of the second movie.
They brought in Robert Carlyle, so I'd assume.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, he must have been part of it somehow, if Robert Carlyle was there.
But yes. I wanted to recommend this one because we have this new one coming out. And I believe you both have seen 28 Days and Weeks, right? Already before this?
Yes. I haven't seen either. I never saw
it. Oh, really? Okay, awesome. Okay, cool. Because I am in the same boat. I have not seen either of these films. But 28 Days Later is usually associated with the revival in the 2000s that zombies really had. This led to, you know, The Last of Us, The Walking Dead show, all that zombie fever we had. So I just thought it'd be interesting to check it out.
I feel like
and
that
I
was like
Danny
the,
Boyle.
I feel like those were like the resurgence of zombies. Cause I feel like,
well,
28 Days Later and everything came out, and then there was a slew of zombie movies and they died again and then they came back again.
With, yeah, like, there was like a little pulse. And... yeah. It just kind of faded across like 15 years or whatever. I think by 2014, people were kind of tired of zombie stuff.
Yeah,
and now it's back,
and now we're bringing it back because we got Last of Us is big again, and we got 28 Years Later coming out. People are excited.
So, but the Last of Us game, that was like on the tail end of The Walking Dead's relevance, right? So that was,
yeah, that was 2013.
Yeah, okay.
When did Walking Dead start? Was it like 2008 or whatever?
Probably around there. Late 2000s. But yeah, I don't know. I've never been a big zombie guy. Out of all like the, you know, archetypal horror villains, zombies aren't usually my favorite ones. There are certain things, like I really like The Last of Us, and I really like 28 Days Later. So maybe I should check out more of them. But it's generally like not something I really gravitate towards. But if Danny Boyle's coming back to do the third film in this franchise, I'm pretty excited because I think the first one was really, really well directed. It was really cool film in a lot of ways.
Yeah, the one thing I knew going in was that, also, first of all, since we mentioned Walking Dead straight up rips off the opening of this movie, right?
I know. I was thinking that.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I haven't read the comic in a long time. It might have been referenced the same way there. I don't know if Robert Kirkman's the one who stole it or if fucking
Robert
Frank
Kirkman,
Darabont.
You hack.
Frank Darabont's the one who stole it.
Wait, yeah, so the Walking Dead comics were before this movie, the 28 Days Later?
I don't know. Let's find
out. No. Walking Dead comics were like early, I guess they were like mid 2000s.
Oh, okay. So
they
like
started whenever my computer loads. this didn't help me at all. 2003, it says.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's a year. Okay. That's a year so after. But
this,
yeah,
probably
I mean,
just like made him. Yeah.
It really, it's a great device to start the movie that way. I mean, actually, it starts the movie with in a way.
Cillian Murphy
it, like,
didn't need to show to drop dong. He didn't need to.
But he did that for
first
us.
Thing you see. That's the first thing you see. No, it's funny because if you think about it, vegans are like the ones who started the zombie apocalypse in this world, you know?
Yeah, I was like, what is the message of this scene?
That whole...
Come here, monkey!
So I actually haven't seen this movie in a long time, and like, actually, I feel like I liked it less than I used to like it. Like, I feel like going back to it, especially watching the second one after, and watching the second one try to copy what the first one did, but badly, it made me like hate some of the things the first one did.
What
did you hate about this first one? Because I really loved this.
the editing is just so like neurotic.
That's
I know it's intentional. I know it's intentional, but it's just annoying. It's like it just grinds at you. And like it's way worse in Weeks. Like way worse in Weeks because they
that's a separate issue, yeah.
But it's, like
they're trying to ape it but doing it badly.
The editing was kind of just annoying, and then a lot of the character motivations didn't really make all that much sense, especially considering like the plot is only 28 days after something terrible happened. And then also, this wouldn't be the situation 28 days after an outbreak happened. Like, especially the timeline makes no fucking city, sense.
You know?
Yeah.
There's so many people. There's millions and millions of people there. Like, why wouldn't there be more zombies?
Yeah, it's just, everything's empty. It's just like, it doesn't make any fucking sense. And then, yeah, like, that's the fair. Character motivations are fucking weird. Like, people just kind of felt like they did things because the story told them to and not because the story built up any, like, understanding for it. Especially, like, the bad guys. Like, they were all those military dudes were just such assholes. And, like, it just didn't really make sense.
I don't know. I feel like immediately watching it, I was like, this would be a sucky situation to, you know, to be a woman showing up in this area where it's like,
yeah,
just like like 12 dudes just like kind of losing their minds together. I'm like, yeah, I feel like this is a very realistic thing that will happen.
Yeah. No, I agree on that situation.
The main guy, military guy was like, look, you know, I promised these guys sex slaves. What do you want? My hands are tied on this. What do you want me to do, buddy?
I signed it into contract. Sex slave.
Well, like, yeah. No, Nick, I was thinking that in the beginning when they're holed up and right after the church scene, they're holed up in like the food court of a strip mall, it looks like. And Cillian Murphy's like, I want to go see my parents. Like, they're in Deptford, which is presumably the suburbs. And they're like, no, we can't leave to go there. I was like, why wouldn't you go to the suburbs? Like, if there was a fucking zombie outbreak, like, that's kind of the best place you want to be.
Stay in the city center.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I didn't really understand. And it seemed like they were in more danger in the suburbs than they were in the city, which I was like, what the fuck is actually going on here? But
yeah, I think a lot of the early city, it's probably the reason they get out of the city so quick is because they're like, listen, we don't have the budget to pay for a crowd of 400 people to pretend to be zombies.
Yeah.
Well, in a way, I feel like a lot of that was because they wanted those shots. If it really felt like a lot of the script was bent on like him being like, I wonder if I can empty out fucking whatever city street this is for a movie.
Well, he didn't even like pay for it. They just got up really early and got the
shots. That's what I'm saying. But like, I think that a lot of the script was changed to make sure that scene was in it. And like, you can tell that it's like they made it, like, you know how in Daredevil they like make sure to add a oneer every season, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's like the similar thing with this, where like in 28 weeks you see like them driving through the city and there's nobody there, and you're like, oh, this is a crazy set piece. How did they get London empty? So I feel like they're just going to keep doing that kind of shit for this type of movie. Like, it feels like a gimmick.
Yeah. Well, the budget of this movie is $8 million. So.
Yeah.
So you're saying they didn't even empty these.
No, I looked it up because I was watching this with my sister and she was like, how did they, like, did they just pay for the streets to shut down? And I looked it up and it was like, no, they could not afford that. So they just got up at like 3 or 4 a.m. and were just like, hopefully no one's in the shot, and they just did that a few times until they got all the shots they needed.
Damn, that's pretty which impressive.
which is just like, yeah, I kind of love that energy.
They also shot the whole thing on like camcorders, like old ass camcorders.
How do you guys feel about that? The quality?
I thought that I got like the standard definition rental on mistake or something when I first. I had to like close it out. I thought my TV was fucked up. I was like, oh god, is it gonna look like this the whole time? But then I just got used to it.
Yeah, I think it's like an old music video. Like, yeah. The quality.
I think it worked pretty well. Like, it's not like, I don't know. It felt very, they like made sure to like make sure like there was a lot of movement in the camera, so it kind of felt intentional.
Yeah, they are good with using that as like a limitation and being creative with that. Like, I know you don't like the editing, but it kind of feels like that's how you have to cut around the shitty frame rate and like grainy footage.
Yeah.
Well, no, because I just didn't like that I can't actually get a look at anything. And sometimes that works whenever they're trying to build attention. But like, okay, think, I don't know, I'm skipping that a little bit, but think to like 28 weeks later. in the boat scene, like, it made nothing make sense. Like, the guy was, like, there. He's like, start the boat. And then he just is miraculously in the water. And then the boat drives 10 feet. And then it shows him right back towards the dock. And it's like, this editing makes no fucking sense.
The thing is,
it's just hard to follow.
It's obviously clearly, like, it's supposed to be fast-paced. And, like, you only get a split second to really kind of capture what's happening in frame. Specifically, there's, like, the scene where he's back at his parents' house. And he finds the VHS footage and is watching that, and you get like a single shot outside the house where you just see like the camera whip pan to the window, and then like I think like 2 or 3 seconds go by, and then you get a zoom camera angle before it just slams through the window, and it's like it's, I think that's really effective and like kind of scary. And then you go to 28 weeks and they're like, we got to do that same thing, but they just did it really badly. They were like, oh, if we cut a lot, it'll be very intense. Instead of to the action.
I felt like the really frenetic editing in 28 Days Later, it didn't really impact like the flow of the story at all, or like my understanding of like where each character is in physical space. But in 28 Weeks Later, especially like the night vision shot at the end, remember that?
I have
like,
it in my notes. It's so bad.
I was like, what? Who is that? Second one, I was like, who is getting beaten by Robert Carlyle right now? Is that even Robert Carlyle? Is it Rose Byrne? Well, I didn't even know what was happening.
Well, not only that, but like they did the night vision, and then they'd switch to like the out of night vision, and it's lit. It's brightly lit. It's like, choose a fucking lane. At least if you're going to switch to the other thing, just make it pitch black. So it's like making us confused like they are.
But well, like, I think that was because the night vision was like a POV shot, you know, so that's only from Rose's perspective. And then we're supposed to see. I didn't really mind that so much. It was almost like, I don't know. It was very choppy. I couldn't tell exactly what character, like what action was being performed on which character, you know, is a little bit
lost. There was a scene where Jeremy Renner was closing the car door, and they showed him closing that car door 3 times. It cut to the car door, the same car door closing 3 times.
Really?
Yes.
Jeremy Renner, I thought, was really good in that movie. I mean, I will say, I think both of these movies, I mean, I really, you know, I think 28 Days Later is way better, but I thought both of them started off really strong. Like for the first half of the second one, I was like, I think I like this one better almost. I almost was like, this movie is really great. I thought the, the intro scene with Robert Carlyle and his wife, and, you know, like just getting you kind of like get comfortable with them in their little bunker. And then there's an ambush, and Robert Carlyle makes this really interesting choice, or really cowardly choice, of just like leaving his wife and some random kid behind. You know, I thought, you know, the boat scene did suffer from the editing you're talking about, Nick, too. But I wasn't even thinking about that at the time, because I was just like caught up in the excitement of the scene. But once they get back to the base and then like things start falling apart, there was a lot of weird character choices and stuff like that. Like, first, why the fuck would they leave the immune woman alone, who's apparently like the most important woman in the world at this point? They just leave her with no one guarding her, and then that's how the outbreak starts again. I was like, what the fuck, you know?
Well, it's the same thing with the monkey. We're going to blend these discussions. Why was there one guy protecting the rage virus monkey in the first movie? This is one scientist.
Well, that one,
and he calls for backup, and nobody comes,
because it's like, it looks like they broke in in the middle of the night, and there's like one guy staying late to work on these things.
Okay, but it's a rage virus that wiped out an entire city in 28 days. Like,
they don't know it's going to do that.
They don't even know that humans could get it at that point.
There are conveniences in the plot in 28 Days Later that I think work for the benefit of the story, like that. Whereas in 28 Weeks, all of the conveniences to get the plot moving are so fucking stupid.
Well, it's just all dependent on the kids being like actually fucking retarded.
That is the worst thing in any horror movie, is when they go, well, how do we get the plot to move forward? Well, the kids are stupid. Kids are dumb, aren't they? Let's have them do something stupid.
Yeah. Why did they even leave again? Why did they have to?
We got to go get a picture of mom, because we'll forget what mom looks like. Come on, let's sneak out to this massive military facility that we've literally been to for an hour and really don't understand the complexities of. Oh, they just hopped the fence and stole a moped. And all the snipers are like, hey, there's a couple of pups jumping the fence. That's weird.
Found your puppies.
Found your puppies.
the movie was like okay, both of these movies, especially back to back, because I watched them right after each other, like, are exhausting. Like, and I think had I just watched like one and then like the other another day, I would have like liked them both more. But like both of them are like a hard watch to get through.
Really? I thought you were a big zombie guy. 28
Days Later was flying.
I love zombies. It's not the zombie aspect. It's because these movies are, or at least 28 Days, it's like meant to be a very serious movie. Like the zombie movies I like have some like camp to them a lot of the time. And there's like zero camp to these.
Yeah. I would say there's zero camp, but I wouldn't say it's devoid of levity and lightheartedness. Like there's the whole scene where they go to just to loot the shopping mart, and I thought that was just a nice little breath of fresh air in the actual plot.
That great song plays too. Granddaddy AM. You guys know that band?
No.
I love that band, but
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I guess it could be like maybe this is like the Christopher Nolan ass. I mean, not that it feels like a Christopher Nolan movie, but it's like it's the ultra serious take on zombies. You know, like this is a dark and gritty zombie movie. You know,
yeah, and in no way am I saying it's bad. Like, by the way, I know it sounds like I'm being critical. I really remember loving it a lot, and now on this most recent rewatch, I'm just like, I don't love it as much as I thought I did. Is more where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I mean, I went into this not really expecting to love it. I don't know if I loved either of them really. I mean, I definitely didn't love the second one. I didn't really love the first one. It's just not really like my main type of movie. But I definitely had fun watching them. You know, like they keep your interest. They're pretty engaging movies, I think. Even the second one, you know, being kind of silly at points, I was like, this is a pretty fun movie. You know, I didn't hate it.
The first one for me, it's like it's a main thing with the plot never feels stupid. Like it never feels like it's entirely moving forward without reason. And it actually has characters for the most part that I really like. Did you guys notice the young girls acting in the part in 28 Days Later?
Yeah. It was kind of all over the place because she basically like randomly became a different character whenever she like started. She like got cocky as fuck like randomly out of nowhere.
Well, she was on on Xanax or whatever. Yeah. Or whatever,
I guess.
Yeah.
But I feel like that doesn't make you just straight up whatever.
That well, it honestly made her act the exact same, because beforehand she was like, "Daddy, no," and then afterwards she's like, "What's going on?" Like she was super monotone the entire thing.
I didn't think,
but like the I mean, characters in the plot felt fucking, normal.
Mad-Eye Moody was good in it.
What I was gonna say. Like, I liked all the characters in 28 Days Later. Like, that was such a bummer seeing him go out like that. Which was also just such a cool shot to get of a character getting infected. Just the blood drop falling down from the lamppost. That was so sick.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was my favorite scene of the movie. Like that, like straight up.
It's so sad because it's terrifying because you only have like 20 seconds, right? Something like that, 15 seconds. So he's just immediately like, "I love you, sweetie. Get away from me."
Yeah.
"I'm going to kill you on accident. I'm sorry."
This movie,
yes.
It's so weird because, like, this movie, everything is so fast. Like, you get infected, you immediately turn into a zombie. The editing, mega, mega fast. An entire city wiped out. It just felt like this movie was, like, in a rush, like, in every single facet. It just, like, I feel like it stresses me out.
I mean, I don't know. The first 20 minutes of 28 Days Later are actually like pretty slow and methodical.
There's no zombie interaction till 20 minutes.
Yeah, like it's mostly just Cillian Murphy like walking down empty streets and wondering what's going on. It's really not until he meets up with Mark and Selena where things really start getting frantic.
You can definitely see Danny Boyle's style to this movie too. It was very Trainspotting.
Yeah, like, it does have that very gritty, low budget kind of feel to it.
Yeah,
but more serious toned, of course.
I was half expecting Ewan McGregor to show up at some point.
I can honestly see him being in one of these.
This was during their feud, I think. So he probably wouldn't have shown up.
Oh yeah, he was butthurt.
Was this the character he was hoping he would get casted as? And
I mean, honestly, if they weren't feuding, I would imagine that this would be an Ewan McGregor type of role, you know?
But now this has kind of become Cillian Murphy's claim to fame, this role.
And honestly, probably, let's think about this. I think Ewan McGregor would have been better.
Maybe.
I don't know. I think Cillian Murphy was really good.
I could see. Yeah, I mean, it would have been a very different movie, I think, if Ewan McGregor was in the role.
But, I don't get the Cillian Murphy, like sucking offness. Like, when has he ever done anything, like, mega good? Like, even in Peaky Blinders, where he's good, he's never, like, had a moment in anything he's ever been in where I'm like, oh, shit.
I mean, I know you didn't like Oppenheimer, but you didn't think he was good as Oppenheimer?
He was. That's crazy. He was good. Like, think about, like, really good actors like Gary Oldman or something. Like, they have those moments where you're like, oh, my God, he's fucking acting. Or, like, what's his name from Inglourious Bastards, the British guy? Or not British guy, the German guy.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Christoph Waltz.
Michael
Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz, he just sucks up the scene. And you're like, holy shit, this guy is amazing. I've never felt that way about Cillian Murphy ever in any role he's ever done.
Yeah, well, I think he's a bit more understated than that. I mean, a lot of his, I think he captivates people with just like his presence, you know. He's like, he's a very present actor. I think he's like a very, he feels like a very empathetic actor. Like, it's very easy to put, yeah, you're like able to put yourself in his shoes very easily when you're watching a movie, because he's just like very easy to relate to, I think. Which, that's good. That's what you want as a movie star, you know? Like, I don't know if Cillian Murphy's necessarily, like, a character. Those other two people that you just named are, like, top-tier character actors. I think I look at Cillian Murphy more like a movie star, you know? I put them in a different kind of category.
Almost. But even actors like Brad Pitt, they've had moments where I'm like, damn, that's wild.
Yeah.
You know? I get it. Like, he hasn't had his, like, standout where you can, like, point to a scene and go.
Yeah, he's not capable of it.
Nick hates on Oppenheimer. I thought Cillian Murphy was like really, really great in Oppenheimer.
But what's a moment in that movie that like blew you away? Like,
don't you see his dick? Is that the moment?
I mean, there are multiple moments in the movie. Towards the end, like when that whole interrogation scene with the government officials is ramping up, and when he's like grieving Florence. Sorry, spoilers. I know you haven't seen it.
Oh, fuck.
He's grieving someone important to him. This certain person that happens to be naked most of the movie, if you know who I'm talking about, Nick. I thought that was a great scene when he's sitting by the tree. Would. Yeah.
We'll have an Oppenheimer discussion and I'll rewatch it.
We'll get around to I'll watch it. I'll surprise you guys one day.
I'm not saying he's a bad actor, by the way. I just don't understand the like mega hype behind him.
Well, I think it's, you know, it happens when Oppenheimer was like a sweep Oscars contender, you know, swept the Oscars in 2023. He had like a powerhouse performance in it, according to most people. So that's the kind of hype you get after a performance like that, you know. So it makes sense. It all lines up to me. You don't think so?
No.
Like he won best actor.
No.
Oppenheimer won like 10, well, like 10 Oscars that year. It made a ton of money.
That movie sucks.
It was part of the Barbenheimer movement, which was probably like the biggest cinematic event of the last decade. You know, like it was. Just,
I mean, I get it, but people watch the movie, and so it's just like people are just blindly slurping somebody off because TikTok told them to. Like, that's all I'm hearing.
I mean, no, you just didn't like the movie. A lot of people really like the movie.
It's a very popular movie.
Like, you don't understand why it's good. That's fine, but it's really a good movie, and then people like his performance in it. So, you know,
he just said you didn't get it, man. You just didn't get it.
No, I'm not saying you didn't. I'm not saying you didn't get it. I'm just saying like you didn't like it. You know, you don't like it. That's fine. But I mean, a lot of people.
No, but also a lot of people like it's not just the Oppenheimer thing, because people are like, oh, I've always loved him. He's finally getting his moment. Oh, he's finally getting the recognition he deserves. And it's like, okay, but since like what else has he done that's great? Like, yeah, Peaky Blinders is good, but Scarecrow. It's like, okay, dude.
He was really good. Bullshit. Scarecrow, he was too, though. Wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he wasn't in a lot of it. He was good as Scarecrow. More of a secondary villain for the first movie, and then was in background of the second and third. But I thought he was really good. Did you know he auditioned for Batman? Have you guys seen that footage?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
He's too creepy looking to be a Batman.
He wouldn't have worked as Batman.
He looked like a sad little orphan boy.
No, but that's what's impressive about him, because he is kind of a creepy looking guy, but at the same time, he can come off like very personable, like, you know, he looks in 28 Days Later, he looks like someone you would trust, whereas Scarecrow, he looks like a total sleazeball, you know,
Salamander Man.
So that's a transformative quality, I think, you know.
I think he's a great supporting actor. I thought he was good in Inception. I like him. I would never say he's like an amazing character actor or anything like that.
Okay. Well,
if we're done glazing and hating on Cillian Murphy, yeah. Should we get like in depth on the second movie? Because we've been kind of bouncing, ping ponging. If we're done talking about 28 Days, should we give a rating?
I'll go like 7 out of 10.
I think I'm at like a 7 too. Yeah, okay. I think 7.
We're doing 3 7s, boys. We're hitting that slot machine. Which, okay. I love what we had all very different views and we all go 7. Yeah, I like this movie a lot. So, but that cannot, the same cannot be said about 28 Weeks Later. Directed by, what's his name? You got this name.
Juan Carlos Fresnadillo.
Yeah. Fresnadillo. Okay. So this one is set 28 weeks later. And I was actually like super interested, like conceptually. I was like, this is a really cool idea for a sequel, like setting and setting wise. And then by the halfway point, when you get to the scene with the wife on the bed, that's when everything, I was like, okay, this is turned into complete schlock where no character has a brain cell in their skull.
It was way too large scale. Watching this again makes me really happy for the trailer of the new one, because it seems like they're scaling it back again to like a smaller story. Because I think that is what made the first one work. And this one, they were just like, add American snipers everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, and then half the characters are American. It's like, why? Like, the charm of it being like a weird British movie was kind of like the appeal.
Yeah, I remember the part where he's like, hey, I'm going to go bang your wife. Not if I bang her first.
He's like, I think I was having that same dream about her, about your wife.
And then he does the fake out zombie bite where he's like,
twice. That happens twice. He does it
twice.
It's so awkward. Yeah.
That's not a joke people would be making that soon, I don't think. Although, like, I don't know. Yeah. I've always heard that, like, military guys do have, they really do a
they
lot of,
like
the gallows humor and stuff. So maybe that makes sense. But I remember thinking, like, are they really going to be joking about this so quickly? I don't know.
It's more just annoying because, like, he could just genuinely just get shot.
That would be really funny. Yeah, the thing that really disappointed me was because I think this setup you have in that pretty good opening scene, I thought, with Robert Carlyle kind of abandoning his wife and leaving her to die, and then going a bit later to where he's set up in this new facility and whatever. And I was like, this is a really good setup for these two characters to come together again and kind of deal with this conflict that is set up from the opening scene. And then they just both die like really fast.
Yeah.
And then we just have what, the children to be main characters, and Jeremy Renner is there, and so is Rose Byrne. And I don't care about them for the last half of the movie.
I was really bummed when Robert Carlyle, it was clear that he was infected. I was like, oh fuck. Now I thought he was the protagonist.
Yeah.
He would have been he would have been such a better protagonist than
the
two girls.
He was so interesting, cuz I'm like, this guy like that's such a fun main character to have, this kind of a coward guy that's hiding a lie from his kids that he let his wife die.
Yeah.
And I like Imogen Poots. Like, I think it's like obvious that like this thing failed on a conceptual level and they really just had a terrible writing team behind it.
Who's Imogen Poots?
That's the young daughter actress.
Oh, I thought, I was like, is Nick making up words?
I've heard that name before.
No, that's her name, bro.
Imogen Poots.
It does. What's the band? Imogen Heap? Is that a band?
Yeah. Imogen
Heap. That's what I was thinking of. Okay.
Yeah. She's in other stuff. I don't even.
Yeah. Robert Carlyle's daughter. She's in Green Room. She's in that movie.
She's in V for Vendetta.
Is she?
Oh, okay.
She's in The Father. Yeah.
She's pretty good. She's like a decent actress, but like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't think anyone. No, I don't think anyone was doing a terrible job, except for the young actor.
She came off as bad. Like, she didn't really have any good lines. She did like, and that scene that we were talking about with her, the scope.
Yeah,
her like blind acting was absolutely atrocious. It was
a lot of like,
yeah. Yeah,
I was watching that. Like
take some notes from Charlie Cox, dude. He knows how to do that.
Yeah, yeah. The it was like watching the scenes through this entire movie. I was just waiting. I was like, okay, what is the stupidest thing a character can either like decide to do, or just how clumsy can our characters be? And I'm like, I know they're going down a dark escalator, but the character's literally like, no, you're fine. There's a thing on there, but just step on it or just go around, go to the right, hold the handlebar or hold the handrail. Just go down, very calm. And it goes on for like a minute until one of them just eats shit and they both roll down an escalator set. I'm like, of course they do. Of course they do.
It also like, nothing made sense. Like, not even just the character, like the main character decisions, but like, you remember the scene when they're all in that big tunnel and everybody's like running around and then zombies are biting people and the kid hops in the like the air vent?
Yeah,
that air vent was huge. Like, people would have seen him hop in that and they would have followed him.
I was expecting a bunch of characters to try to climb in there and it was going to collapse under the weight. That was what I was thinking, what they were setting up.
It's just a bad script, like through and through. The script is terrible.
And then the
editing's worse.
Like, it's like they went, okay, we're going to end this movie by having another outbreak. But to get there, it was like, we had to have the most contrived way of a woman who is a carrier who is not showing symptoms of the infection, but has the infection. We're going to strap her to a table, not put a security guard around her, not going to have any high security. Anyone with a card can just get in here. And then he goes in, makes out with his wife, gets infected, and then gets out, kills like two guards with loaded rifles, and then just kind of finds his way down a tunnel into the parking garage and kills, and then it just goes from there. I'm like, okay, all right.
This sure. Movie just very obviously was trying to ride the coattails of the original, and I feel like they were just rushing it out because they wanted to make a quick buck. Like, there's no love in this movie.
But like 5 years is not rushing.
Yeah, it's not even that.
That's like a decent amount of time between sequels. Just yeah.
There's no way this movie wasn't rushed.
The one thing that I didn't understand is like, you know, Jeremy Renner's up on the roof. He gets the order to start killing everybody that's down there, and he, despite the fact that he totally like flips on his orders and seemingly like betrays the U.S. military and just like, you know, he goes AWOL or whatever. When he's doing that, he doesn't even really seem like he cares that he's killing
everyone. Yeah, he just murders people senselessly, and then he's like, now I have a conscience.
Yeah, yeah, it's not like when he gets the order, he's like, screw this, and puts his rifle down. He starts killing like four or five people, and then he sees a kid and goes, you know what? This isn't Jesus's way.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no like moment of realization for him. It seemed like he wasn't given much direction to like seem very conflicted about it, you know? Which you need if he's going to be this like self-sacrificing person that gives up on the entire organization to just like help out these random people, you know?
Yeah, he has no character. He's just kind of there to help them escape in one scene and then get lit on fire.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, it like you guys were alluding to before, it is very strange. It's a strange decision, even in the first one, to make the virus turn people into zombies so quickly. Like that, I why do they do it that way? I don't know.
I think that's interesting. As like, it's kind of like, it's a horror movie. I think that's one of the most horrifying outcomes you can have. Is
but it
you
becomes get, like, more
a sentence before you're done.
Yeah.
But the thing about like zombie stuff is a lot of the time they try to like make it, they give you the bullshit in a way that like kind of makes sense, and like you kind of have to throw all like any kind of logic out of your head like for this to be acceptable and understandable. Like, you're basically watching some weird sci-fi movie, or like it's like becomes more like magic than any kind of science behind it.
Yeah,
just because it's fast.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that's because nothing, there's no virus that infects anybody that quickly, you know? Like, there's just no way that would happen. It's already a stretch to assume that, like, there could be a virus that could turn somebody into a zombie to begin with. But, like, you know, not that, I'm not saying that, this isn't even a gripe. I was just, like, asking, like, why you think they chose to make it such a quick turnaround, you know?
I think it's just because it's way scarier.
Yeah.
I think it's just a plot decision.
Hours. Yeah.
He wanted to make things fast.
And that's also because not a lot of other media does that. The only other thing I can think that does that is like World War Z, where it's like 20, 30 seconds as well.
But oh, really?
Of course, that was after. Yeah.
I think, well, I feel like the scene with Brendan Gleeson was just really great when he's like fighting against the virus, you know, to get his daughter away from him. You can see he's like really wrestling with it before it overtakes him. That was really cool.
Yeah, that was probably the best scene in the first movie for me.
Well, honestly, my biggest issue with the first one is how Jim just like randomly turns into the Winter Soldier at the end, and he's like a shirtless super soldier from the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
You're not gonna hurt my girlfriend I met yesterday. I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah, he's so like in the beginning, he's a bike courier that like doesn't want to hurt anybody, and then he's just like murking 8 special forces operators. You know, like it's crazy.
Hey, they were out of practice.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah,
they were in there. They wanted concubines. They weren't ready for war.
No, they were gooning too much. They were not ready for battle.
I don't know.
I do find it funny how in that final scene when she thinks he's infected, Selena thinks Jim is infected, and I'm like, Jim, you could have literally said, "I'm not infected," but he like risked it by going up like all shirtless and like let her almost cut him in the face just to be like, "What's up?"
Yeah. I was surprised that he even recovered. I thought the movie was going to end with him dying, you know?
I thought it was going to end with the freeze frame car crash, which I haven't read the original script, but I've heard that it was a much bleaker ending. Like, it was just going to be, this sucks. Everything sucks. World screwed.
All right, go on, Ethan.
Which is interesting. In 28 Weeks Later, did you guys see the post-credit scene?
No.
Where they go, hey, French people, fuck you. And now France is affected by the rage virus.
I remember that when I first watched it.
Okay. But then I looked it up and it was like 28 years later. And they're like, nope, it's just the UK. So France went, no, we're not doing that.
I guess they were able to contain it or something.
I guess, yeah. They just said, so in 28 years later, the entire infection is entirely quarantined on the United Kingdom. And it's basically a post-apocalyptic.
That also makes no sense, by the way.
I think that's kind of sick, even if it doesn't make logical sense. I think that's a cool setting.
I guess so.
Wait, it wouldn't make sense that it would just be the UK.
Yeah, it wouldn't make any sense. People would find a way out. Just
entirely cut off, like it's an island, though.
Yeah, but if there was somebody who got on a plane or something, you know, I don't know. Airports are like, there's a huge, huge mass of people at the airport. I mean, I guess the difference is like, if the virus only incubates in your body for 20 seconds before you turn into a zombie rage monster, then you probably wouldn't want to get on a plane. So I mean, that's what makes it like the virus or the fungal infection or whatever in The Last of Us is so much more easy to spread, because it can just like lay dormant in your body for a little bit before it takes you over, so you do have time to like go to a different country or whatever. But in this story, I guess that's maybe why they can keep
it. But the whole thing is it also wiped out an entire country in 28 days. Like, people would have gotten out.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. But I don't know. I mean, didn't they make some kind of comments about how it's probably in New York, too? In the first
one? No, I thought... When did they say that? Because I know he was talking about how, like, the other world... He's like, oh, in America, they're watching the fucking Simpsons right now while we're sitting here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he quoted his favorite part from The Simpsons. That was pretty funny.
That's right. He's like, okay, so the bit is Mr. Burns comes in and goes, Smithers.
Smithers, we know you're gay. That was the whole joke.
Stop pretending. Excellent.
So
I don't have much else to say about this one.
But let's talk about the next one for a second. Like,
happy to talk about that.
Are they going to have the kid who has the same, you know, immunity against the virus that his mom did, is he going to play like a major role in this?
I don't think there's going to be much carryover from the second movie, because the second movie is not as popular as the first movie. I think they implied
that the kid's dead because he's the reason it got passed over to France.
Because he's a carrier.
Yeah, he's the carrier. Wait, how did they imply that he's dead?
Because how did the wife die? I mean,
the wife died.
You're saying he might have died.
He most likely died.
Okay.
Wait, what wife?
Yeah,
the mom.
The mom. Because the mom was a carrier.
Robert Carlyle killed her.
So she infected Robert Carlyle. And then the rage virus, even if you're a carrier, they're still going to just rage each other. And like he ripped her apart. So he's implying that this kid went to France, accidentally infected somebody, and then he probably got killed in the infection.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, that's kind of a leap to make. I don't know if that's necessarily one meets the other, you know.
What if he was just like hawking a loogie over like a bridge and hit some guy and then he left?
Yeah, but I mean
from
the,
all
the only reason why the wife got killed because she was fucking tied to a bed while she was doing, you know,
true,
while her husband turned. Yeah. He already got away from tons of zombies before to survive this long. So I don't know. I'm just saying, like, it's not a done deal that the kid is dead. I wouldn't say.
It's true. Yeah. But I don't think that they would want to reference this one, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, this, as soon as we got to the, it was absolute schlock. As soon as we got to the
compound,
the helicopter beheading or cutting in half like 40 zombies while he's just like, fuck this. And just, and he didn't crash, I don't think, right? He was just fine.
No.
He's an expert helicopter pilot.
I'm an expert helicopter pilot. Because I'm a goddamn American.
From what I've seen of the screens in the trailer, it doesn't seem like they're going to be trying to use any of the same stuff they did, but
I know that the 28 years later is the beginning of a trilogy, and I know Danny Boyle is directing the first one, and then Alex Garland's writing all three, and then Danny Boyle is returning to direct the third one, and I think Nia DaCosta is directing the second one.
I don't know if I like
so that. Yeah, so I'm curious to see what they'll do, but I'm very curious to see how they kind of explain how the virus has still been going, because I know we have carriers, but they also explain that infected can starve to death. Like they, in 28 weeks later, they starved after a little over a month.
Yeah.
And then 28 years later, there's still infected hanging out, just like around. So unless it's mutated or something, and they're like,
I'm just going to say, if they're making a trilogy and using the same characters and they kill Aaron Taylor Johnson in the first one, I'm not watching the second one.
Yeah. I know Cillian Murphy's coming back. I think he's only in the third one, though.
Not really?
Yeah. Yeah, he said he was coming back. But he's not going to be in the first 28 years later.
I think if they bring him back, then there's a chance they bring back some people from the second one and one of the other ones.
I would love to
They're going
to
pull like a Star Wars sequels.
I was just about to say, I was like, I'd love to see Robert Carlyle come back, but he's fucking dead.
He's dead? I didn't even know he died.
Not the actor, the character.
Oh.
Yeah, the zombie Robert Carlyle is dead.
Oh, damn it. I wish just in my dumb lizard brain, I wish that they would have waited till exactly 28 years after 2002 to make this movie, you know? That would have been nice.
People complaining that they skipped 28 months later. But it's like, we're so much closer to 28 years later than we are to 28 months.
that's the worst type of Reddit person that would say something like
and
that.
Actually, you skipped months.
You skipped months.
28 nanoseconds later.
All right, so let's do a rating for the second
one. 28 weeks later. I'm going to give this one a 3 out of 10. I don't think this was good, and it was very much aping the original in every way, but worse.
Yeah, 3.
And yeah.
I'm going to go like 4.5, just because I really do like the beginning. I liked like the first half hour of this movie a lot, so that goes for something.
That's fine.
It gave me an actual migraine.
I think the second half was just so bad that it tarnished any possible thing I could have liked in the first part.
Yeah. So the other thing we wanted to touch on today is there's some big, you know, big news in the Marvel. Sorry, Nick. There's some big news in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Nick hates to see it.
Yeah, the casting decisions for Avengers Doomsday, which is coming out in 2026. Yeah, next year. And the cast is just filled with like old X-Men alums, like, you know, Patrick Stewart. They got,
James Marsden's
coming back, Ian McKellen. And then, you know, all
the original the Fantastic.
And then the new Fantastic Four is going to be there. I'm sure there's people that are going to show up that aren't in this official casting too. But I mean, I don't know. How did you guys feel about it overall, the casting?
I
couldn't care less.
That's the thing. Like, you know, VHS Nick, he's a big hater and he's a grump. But I was like, I would love to be excited for this. I couldn't even muster any bit of excitement. I'm like, yeah, I like all these people, but I don't know. Maybe 5 years ago, I would have been like, fuck yeah, M'Baku.
Make a good movie and I'll care. Make a single good Marvel Guardians movie and I'll care. Okay. And then James Gunn doesn't even work for Marvel
anymore. And then
he's
gone. He's off.
Did you watch Guardians of the Galaxy 3?
No, I haven't seen the third. I believe y'all. It's good though.
It's good. Genuinely good.
I know I'll like it when I see it.
All right, this might be a hot take. I don't think it's possible for a genuinely shitty movie to make $3 billion. I don't think that. I don't know how you can say that.
I think you are immensely. What's the word? Fuck. Never mind. I think you have too much faith in the general public.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. I'd say there's a level to this.
It has to have mass appeal. That's it. Anything on top is great.
International marketability. If you make a movie that people in China love, you're gonna make a fucking shitload of money.
Transformers movies have made so much money, and they are so bad.
Yeah, and also like, I'm a big Avatar lover. Like I suck off Avatar all the time. But those movies are objectively not very good.
I don't even think that's true.
Think the first one's good. I don't think the second one's as good. But
why are they objectively not very good?
It's a very contrived story. It's very silly. And the CGI is like what makes it cool. That's it.
So you think people just like to go see it because it's like
it's pretty.
It's like technologically advanced CGI or whatever. I don't know. I think people are connected to the story spectacle too. I think the story in the Avatar movies is pretty good. I mean, also
it's very generic. It's not bad. It's generic.
I don't even think it's necessarily generic. It's actually pretty cool to see a movie that does that well in America, where the American government and military are they're objectively the bad guys in the movie, which is kind of surprising and sort of a cool subversion. You know, like the
unobtainium.
You can make fun of like the terms or whatever that they're using, but on the face of it, it's a movie about like the dangers of colonialism, and the fact that that does so well at the box office is pretty cool, I think.
Yeah,
but it's literally Pocahontas.
Yeah, it's a very
it's literally Ferngully. Ferngully did it better.
The story structure is very much a known kind of a structure,
and I'm not shitting on that. I think that's fine. I think that's fine. It's not bad, but there's nothing other than making interesting looking blue people. This movie isn't doing anything new.
I mean, well, why does a movie have to do something new every single time for you to be impressed by it? I mean, like, I don't know. I think that's kind of
I am impressed by it.
Like a tall order.
The thing it does is it's pretty and it impresses me and I go see them. But objectively, I wouldn't say it's a great movie. That's all I'm saying.
So does a movie have to do something new for it to be a great movie?
I think so. Or at least do it in a way that I haven't like seen before. Or just do it so well that it like blows my mind.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like you can wear your influences on your sleeve as an artist, but as long as you do that in a way and that creates a really engaging story or, you know, a really engaging, like technical viewing experience. I think that still can make a great movie. You know, it doesn't have to be like the most original thing in the entire world every single time.
Do a good job, if you do like a simple story or done to death story, if you do a good job, like do it super well, it's still a good story, you know, even if you've seen it before.
And
it might lost some of its luster, but
yeah, a lot of the Marvel movies I won't go to bat for. You know, I don't think that I don't think they've made a lot of really good movies. You know, I like a lot of them as like, you know, fun popcorn things, but I will go to bat for Endgame. I think Endgame is actually a genuinely good movie. I wouldn't say a great movie, but I think it's a good movie. You know, it has all the things that good movies have, Endgame.
Do you think that Endgame is better than Infinity War?
I kind of go back and forth on it. I think they're both really good in their own rights, but I do think Endgame is a little bit better just because it's very unique among the, you know, like the Marvel catalog for actually like allowing their characters to sit in their failure, you know, which is usually they don't fail, so they never have a chance to like mull it over, to like mull over the actual ramifications of what happened in the world just now. But in that movie, the entire first hour is just dedicated to them like trying to pick up the pieces after this horrible thing happened. You know, it doesn't even really feel like a superhero movie for the first hour. You know, it's kind of just like these characters dealing with a world that's radically changed and like trying to find their way in it, you know, and trying to move on. So,
but if
I don't know,
think
that
about
was
these
pretty
movies,
impressive, I think.
If you think about movies, or at least for me, movies that like really stick with me, it's like, it's sure, a movie can like have an amazing build up, it can do all these things, but it's really about how it leaves me feeling in the end that like matters. That's how I remember that movie. And I remember being like, oh, so none of that really mattered. There were no stakes. Half the people disappeared, but they're all back. Okay.
Well, that, I mean, you're talking about Infinity War, though, because the stakes from Endgame do hold. Like, the people who die in Endgame do stay dead.
How?
Tony Stark stays dead.
They killed, like, one person.
Tony Stark is the big death, and he stays dead, you know?
He's still dead. Just don't look at the cast list for Avengers. Yeah.
Well, that's a different... Dude, these, I mean, you guys know this is a... These are what comic...
It's comic
book. This
shit.
Is a comic book problem, you know? Like, that's what these stories are like.
But they have made good... They have made good comic book movies that have stakes. They literally exist.
I mean, I don't understand why Endgame doesn't have stakes, though. The stakes are emotional, and there are a lot... There's a
Kill
lot
more
of emotional
heroes.
Stakes. Why does someone just have to die for there to be stakes? I mean, the stakes are internal. Because
that
characters.
Is the stakes that they created. Half the people dying. That was the stakes that they made. So they need to uphold those
half
stakes.
Half the people not existing.
Okay.
I'm actually.
you know the characters are going to come back. Everybody knows that, unless you're like Seven. You know they're going to come back. So, like, that's who cares? You know, that's a comic book trope, you know? You have to accept shit like that if you're going to even go sit in the movie theater and watch this kind of stuff, you know?
I think
but there are movies that they've done that have stakes. That, like, some of the Guardians movies felt like they had stakes.
Yeah, characters have died in Guardians. Usually each movie a character will die. Yeah, for me, the problem more so has not been the fact that they don't kill characters. It's the fact that when they do kill some characters, this isn't a problem exclusive to Endgame and Infinity War. But when they do kill characters, they go, okay, they're dead. Now, in this universe, there's a version of them that's basically the same person. Now they're hanging out with us, and they're played by the same actor. that's kind of been my concern with the whole multiverse saga that they've been doing. Is like, it doesn't feel like there is stakes in that way. Where I'm like,
Think about some of the best like comic book characters, like Spider-Man, like is like built on stakes. Fucking Gwen Stacy dying, his uncle dying. Like they build stakes immediately to make you attached to these characters, and it just, I don't know, like it just feels like these movies lack that, like any kind of finality to them.
Well, I mean, I'll totally agree with you that they could kill these characters and make them stay dead. Like that would be something I would appreciate, which is something I really appreciate about Invincible. For example. But at the same time, I think for the characters in Endgame in particular, the stakes are emotional ones. Like it's about Captain America and Tony Stark mostly. Captain America's ending is all about realizing that he can't have a fulfilling life by just living and sacrificing for other people. He has to go out and get something for himself, while Tony Stark realizes the exact opposite, and their arcs dovetail in like a really beautiful way. Which is just like objectively great writing, you know, like you can make fun of it, but that's good. It's good stuff.
Ethan, I don't know if I've asked you, well, what are your favorite Marvel movies?
Oh God, this is like 27 of them. I really like the I'm getting rid of parameters. I don't know. I really like the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy. I really like Infinity War. I think that's definitively my favorite Avengers movie. The first Iron Man's really good. The Thor Ragnarok's fun. That's kind of it. I don't know. Maybe there's more, but that's kind of where I'm sitting right now.
I like the Captain America movie, the first one.
I like bits of it.
The first half of the first Captain America movie is really good. I think, like, when he's skinny Steve, and yeah. I just didn't like the third act so much with the Red Skull and everything.
I don't love the third act of that movie, but I will say it's got a killer ending when he wakes up modern day and he's got that final line where he's like, "Hey, are you gonna be okay, Cap?" And he's like, "Yeah, I had a date." Ooh, I get goosebumps.
Yeah.
I think they did such a good job with a lot of the casting, especially like the early MCU characters. Like, the Captain America was perfect. Iron Man was perfect. Thor, honestly, pretty fucking perfect, even though those movies sucked.
You didn't respond to anything I said about the characters in Endgame, the stakes. You're just like, okay, anyway, Ethan, just what do you have to say about that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I already said it. You didn't say anything.
No, you wanted me to answer it?
Yes, you're saying how there's no stakes in these movies, and I just explained.
I just disagree. I hate Civil War so much.
I'm talking about Endgame.
You were talking about Iron Man like having making a realization, which I don't even get. Like, the only thing I remember from that movie is him being sad when
his
fucking Tom Holland disappears.
I'm talking about Endgame when Tony Stark's realization is that he needs to do what Captain America has been doing this whole time. When he took in the first Captain America movie, when he takes the plane down and saves people from Red Skull's bomb sacrifice. Killing them or whatever. Yeah. He needs to learn how to sacrifice, and which is what he does, which is why he dies and Captain America, you know, retires and gets to live his own life. The kind of life that Tony had the whole time.
The stakes for, like, Tony does die, but I also consider, in a way, Cap kind of dies because he's like basically like, "I'm gonna go and turn into Joe Biden," and then he's just gone.
Yeah, but that one doesn't feel like stakes because it feels like it's his decision, right?
Yeah, but I agree. Tony's death.
No, I agree. I agree with you on the Tony Stark thing. I think he is like what makes that movie actually. I don't even dislike those movies; like, they're okay, but like. Yes, Tony Stark made that movie. I agree.
I think the director made the movie.
I think the part of the movie that like where like I just checked out and was like, I don't give a shit about this, is whenever they did the big Avengers assemble at the end and it was just a massive CG for 25 minutes. And I was just I wish.
But that was like the point. It's like culminating fan service. Like, that was the moment in theaters. I'm a guy who's always like, oh God, I hate fan service. But that one, I was like, you know what, Marvel? It's been 10 goddamn years or whatever. You earned it, buddy. And then I went, fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's been 10 years. And also, they made a really good movie in Endgame where you feel for those characters. Or at least I did.
And then,
I felt for those characters in the beginning. And then, you know, it's like the first act is really depressing. The second act is like a fun heist, like a time journey throughout the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's like, you know, it's fan service, but it's really well done and it's really fun. And then the ending is that, you know, that culminative cathartic release where all the characters get back together. There's like the portal scene. It's a good movie, I think. I think it's a really well constructed movie.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. Like, whenever I left those movies, I was like, those are sick, right? Like, I felt the same way you feel after I, like, left those movies. But like, the more shitty Marvel products I've consumed since then, the less I can look at them fondly.
Well, that's like, fair. I don't know. That's fair. I understand that. My thing is like, yeah, I think, and I said this, I think, when we talked about our Deadpool and Wolverine thing, when I, you know, none of us really liked that movie. And I was like, I keep going to these movies to try to like, in the hopes that they'll give me that experience again of going to see Endgame for the first time, but then I keep getting burned, you know? And that's what it's been like for the past few years, you know?
I think you will get that again through DC, though. Like, I genuinely think that once we get to the next Justice League, you'll kind of get that feeling again.
Yeah, I hope so. I have high hopes for that, at least. But, I mean, I don't know. I also think it could be a really cool thing that happens with, you know, we should bring it back to the casting or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Boomer's Day.
The Doomsday thing, because I made a video about this. I feel like they're doing the fucking multiverse saga. Might as well just do it. Just do the nostalgia shit. Bring back everybody. Do the fucking cameos. Just make it, you know, make it feel earned. Do it like Infinity War and Endgame, where it's like the fan service and the cameo shit is blended effortlessly with the, you know, actual good filmmaking. And I think it'll feel like a good experience.
But my problem is we literally just got that with Deadpool. Like, they went all out with the fucking multiverse shit, just like the last movie Marvel released. Or yeah, second but that's to last. Like
their silly Deadpool movie. Yeah. It's not the Avengers,
okay, but it's gonna feel the silly.
Climactic one.
It's oh yeah. It's so,
I mean, this is a comic book movie.
I don't it know. I'm just so inherently. Over it.
Yeah, I more have an issue with the fact that this was what is originally called Avengers Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars. Now it's Doomsday and Secret Wars. It less so feels like this is a culmination of everything past Endgame, and now it feels like none of this stuff in between Endgame and Doomsday has been working. So that was all just kind of like a filler period. And now we're restarting again. Like, it feels like the kickoff of new Marvel stuff rather than a culmination.
I think they basically are looking at it that way. They're like,
I think they're going to reboot the universe.
They are. Yeah. They like 100% are, because I'm reading reports that like the Russos are being charged with ending this, you know, the first 15 years of the Marvel Cinematic Universe from 2008 to 2027 or whatever. And then they're also going to kick off this new soft rebooted one where the Fantastic Four, X-Men, and Avengers all live together in the same universe. And they'll be able to pick and choose from the cast, be like, oh, we can keep Tom Holland, cast a new Tony Stark, cast a new Cap, whatever they need to do, you know? Which,
do y'all remember, like right before, I think it was Endgame, where they were like, you have to watch Captain Marvel to understand what's happening in the next thing, right? Mm-hmm. They like basically like used it as like a condition to sell the next movie. And that's what every one of these has felt like. It feels like the multiverse thing is like almost like them trying to force you to watch the other Marvel properties because you feel like they're going to tie in with each other.
Yeah, I don't know. At the same time, it's like people say that you need to watch all these things to understand what's happening, but is that really true? Like,
it's not true. That's my point.
Do you think anyone's ever gone to any of these movies and been like, huh, what the hell? Like,
yeah, my wife saw Infinity War after seeing three movies.
Yeah, like you get it, you know? Not
no, she was very confused.
Confused about what, though?
She was like, why does that guy have a robot arm? Why is there a raccoon here? You know?
All right, well, you know, those are just, there's just the character thing. I'm just saying, like, there's not going to be any, like, really, really important plot stuff that they're not going to explain, which is why in Infinity War, Wong, or I think, explains what the Infinity Stones are at the beginning. So people who are going in to Infinity War as a starting point to the MCU understand what's going to happen next and what the main, you know, narrative thrust of the movie is. So it's like, these are the MacGuffins. This is what Thanos wants. This is why he wants them. Like, they're going to do the same thing in Doomsday. I don't think that you really need to think of it as homework. And like, Marvel has, they're already like kind of like segmenting their output by now. If you notice in the beginning of things like Daredevil, it says Marvel Television instead of Marvel Studios, because there is continuity, but they're not going to put super duper important shit in the series anymore because they know everyone's not watching them, you know? Which I think is a smart decision.
Do y'all think they made any mistakes with any of the casting? Or do y'all have anything?
Like, overall through their entire
No, thing? Well, no, like through the reveals.
Oh, like characters that are going to be in there? I don't know the context, so it's kind of hard to judge.
Yeah. If you guys, I've been hearing rumors that the plot of this movie is going to be, because did you guys watch the post-credit scene for the Brave New World?
Remember,
wasn't it
guy, the nutsack headed guy being like, there's a bad guy showing up soon,
Mr. Pendansky, Nick.
yeah, Mr. Pendansky.
Yeah, so he's talking about the multiverse and saying like, oh, what are you gonna do when you have to fight, he says, like, you have to fight yourselves or something, which is, I've been hearing rumors for a while, even before that scene, that the plot of this movie is gonna be like Dark Avengers. So they're going to go through the multiverse and get like Hydra Captain America, or like Hydra Hawkeye. Like, the original six Avengers are going to be like the you know, remember like the Squidward guy for Thanos? Like, those, the Dark Avengers are going to be like Avengers are going to be serve that role for Doctor Doom. Which,
so are we going to get the version of Captain America played by Chris Evans where he's a Nazi?
Yes.
They're just going to pull a Nega Flash.
He's going to be like, I love Tesla.
Yeah, they're
I don't know.
Reverse Flash.
I'm going to have to watch this movie because of the podcast, but I'm not going to.
I actually have a list of every character that has not been confirmed for the Doomsday cast. So everyone.
Well, that doesn't even really matter because you know that they're going to leave some seat. Because the way they do it, because if you remember in like Endgame and shit, they didn't announce a bunch of stuff so that people would give like crazy word of mouth. Did you know that they did this? Oh my God, it's crazy.
True.
Yeah. Again, though, like you guys say that this stuff is kind of dying out, and yes, it's not making as much money as it once did, but there was fucking 10 million people when I checked the Twitter feed watching just a live stream that was just empty chairs for 5.5 hours. Just 10 fucking million people wanting to see
this. How many of those were bots?
I mean, I don't
well,
know,
it's
but
Twitter,
it's
probably three-quarters.
It's a lot. It's a lot of people, even if there are some bots, you know? It's still a popular thing, is my point, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
No, I think it just needs, like, people are still willing to see these movies if they care about the movie itself. Like, Deadpool and Wolverine did well. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 did really well. Nobody's seeing everything anymore. We right before Endgame, they were in a really sweet period where they could literally put out anything and everyone would go, new Marvel thing, I gotta go see it. Like, Captain Marvel made $1 billion and that was a very mediocre movie. But now I think people are just like, no, I'm not going to see everything. And also that it wasn't helped by the amount of output from Marvel themselves, how many movies and shows there were. So yeah. People just kind of just detached.
But I think Doomsday will make over $2 billion. I think.
I don't know about that.
Only if Fantastic Four and Thunderbolts are good. That's entirely dependent on that.
Yeah.
I don't even know how much it matters. I think people are going to be really pumped to see that, especially it's the first Avengers movie in like 7 years. It'll be RDJ's in it, all the old X-Men that people are really nostalgic for. Like, there's a lot of, you know, just in the casting alone, there's a lot of reasons why people would want to go see that in theaters, I think.
I think you'd be surprised. I think if these next two movies don't create any excitement, it's going to wane, because that movie doesn't come out for quite a while.
Doomsday?
Yeah.
Well, 1 year.
Yeah.
So we got two before that. I think that's enough time.
But you know, what if they
pump up the post credits? What if Robert Downey Jr. just shows up in a post credits or the end of Fantastic Four and he's like, "I hate you 3000." And everyone's like, "Oh my god."
I don't know.
Well, I have to say, I don't know. I find the whole. The conceit of casting all the old X-Men characters and like basically if Endgame was like cycling through the first 10 years of Marvel Studios cinematic adaptation, like I feel like Doomsday and Secret Wars are going to be just like cycling through the entire 40-year history of Marvel cinematic adaptation on film. Yeah. Like I think that is it's kind of nostalgia bait or whatever, but it's like that's what these movies are about, you know. It's like they're fun popcorn movies. Like, I'm a fan. Fucking service me, you know? Like, that's what I want. So, I'm totally fine with it.
I'm a fan. Fucking service me. Couldn't have said it better. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I want to see a trailer. I can guarantee the ending of the trailer will be like, someone comes up and goes like, "Tony, is that you?" And he turns and he's like, "I don't even know who you are." Dun, dun. And he's... in his green cape or whatever.
I mean, I think it's interesting that, like, you know, there are so many directors that do really great work outside of the Marvel machine, then once they get into it, really flounder. Whereas, like, the Russo brothers are the exact opposite.
They're the opposite.
They're, like, make literally the most successful movie of all time in Endgame, financially successful, and then they go get a Netflix deal and make like four movies that everybody hates, you know. It's just kind of funny in that way.
Or they're just forgettable. Like, who here remembers The Gray Man?
I actually thought The Gray Man was pretty good. Did everyone really hate that?
Well, they also made that one with Chris Evans and Ana de Armas that nobody remembers as well.
And then the one with Tom Holland.
That cherry where you see up his asshole?
Yeah.
What?
There's a camera shot where the doctor looks through it like a little stethoscope and the camera is like inside the hole.
Oh, that's like the opening scene to Uncut Gems. Remember that?
Yeah.
They do like they do the fucking camera zoom into the uncut gem, and then you come out of Adam Sandler's asshole for a colonoscopy. Yeah, but what a way to start a movie that was.
Yeah, what a hook.
And wait, so the Safdie brothers have a movie coming out with The Rock soon, right? Is that this year?
Yeah, it's only one of them.
Punching Machine. It's only one of the bros.
Was there a falling out between the bros?
No, I think they're taking a break.
Yeah, just doing their own things.
Just doing their own stuff.
Was there like a Loki Thor situation between the Safdie brothers?
I'm sure they'll make a movie again soon. Because one of them was working on that show with Nathan Fielder.
Oh, yeah. The
That show was actually really good. The Curse.
Yeah, The Curse.
That's right. And Emma Stone.
Really, really good show. That was very difficult to watch. Which reminds me, I want to do a quick advertisement for anyone listening to this, and also just you guys. I mentioned to it in the group chat, but you guys have to watch The Studio, the new Seth Rogen.
Oh yeah, I'll watch that. This
Evan
week.
Goldberg movie, TV show. It's fucking excellent, because you know there's a lot of these shows lately or movies that kind of like make fun of the way Hollywood is run these days. You know, like hyping up IP things and all that shit. And like the main plot of the first episode is like Seth Rogen gets. He gets a promotion, and he's like now the head of a big like Warner Brothers type studio, and the guy ahead of him is like, I just got the IP for Kool-Aid. We're gonna do a Kool-Aid movie with like the whole with the Kool-Aid man and his family, and you know, like it's like
Kool-Aid universe.
Yeah, ridiculous. But you know, like Martin Scorsese's in it. Fucking so many great people are in it. It's a really, really great show. But
I'll watch that because the trailer was really good.
Yeah,
you gotta quit recommending me stuff on Apple TV because you got this Severance. I don't have Apple TV, man.
Dude, you gotta get it. just get it for like a month or like once. I'll let you know when this show's over because Severance is already over.
I'll binge Severance.
Yeah, binge Severance and this in a month, and you're good.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah, we're white dudes. We were like genetically coded to love Severance.
Well,
I don't know anything about Severance.
Do you watch it, Nick? Severance?
No. I will though.
Yeah, it's that one's.
I just know everyone's talking about it. Like season two was when like it became mega popular.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, one of the best shows of the past couple years for sure. It's really, really good.
Ben Stiller directed. He directed my favorite movie of all time.
Or whatever, right? Yeah, Ben Stiller.
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
No.
Oh.
I love that movie though.
Tropic Thunder.
Oh, Tropic Thunder. Yeah, the Tropic Thunder is a really, really good movie.
So fucking funny.
Robert Downey Jr. is so funny in that movie.
Everybody is. It's like literally everybody was at the top of their game.
Even Al Pacino.
Yeah, wait.
The booty sweat guy?
Oh, Brandon T. Jackson?
Yeah. He sells booty sweat and busting up bars.
Booty sweat and busting a nut bars? Yeah. Hell yeah.
All right, so for
a pussy.
For the last 20 minutes, let's dig into this AI shit for a second too.
Because
you know,
do you want me to set the scene?
Yeah, set the scene.
All right, so I wrote this comic script like 6 years ago, and I just want to make it like at this point, and I was like, I don't want to fucking pay an artist. Like, I can at least get a proof of concept made through like AI, and. But the more I've been looking into it, the more I realize like artists fucking hate AI, even if the intention isn't necessarily as a replacement. Because here's my stance, right? Either my script can sit in my Google Docs for another 10 years because I'm not going to pay somebody to do it, or I can make a proof of concept with AI that does the artwork for me so that it can be done. So like, if it's not actually taking any jobs away, I don't understand what the harm is in it. So let's discuss that.
Yeah, I mean, Ethan, I think is definitely more vitriolic about this topic than I am. Especially like
in strong word
in terms of Nick, you know, describing it exactly the way he did, like just making it for a proof of concept in order to, you know, just generate interest and potentially get an actual human person to. Get on board and help him illustrate the whole thing. Like, I think that's totally acceptable, you know?
I was more approaching this in a way of, I didn't realize it was like a proof of concept thing. I thought you were just making this with AI art as like the finished product. That's what I thought you were doing.
Oh,
no. I mean, okay.
No, yeah, you're good. Go ahead.
Well, I think there will definitely be a point in time when that is possible, and I guess that's another discussion we can have. There's definitely way too many limitations in AI right now to make something near as good as a human can do as far as like actual comic art and things like that. I think there are a lot of things you can do, but yeah, I think right now it's not there. But if it were there, what would your argument be for that?
I think if you're presenting me with a piece of art that you have made and you go, hey, I made this thing, I'm really proud of it, could you check it out? Or just, you know, you're posting it publicly online, whatever. And I see it and I go, oh, the artwork for this was AI generated. Immediately in my head, I am already thinking, okay, if the AI generated the artwork because they couldn't, you know, whatever, they couldn't do it or they couldn't afford to pay someone or they didn't want to do it themselves, whatever. How much of this piece of art is AI generated, excluding the art? Is the writing AI generated? How much of that is AI generated? It just makes me start to question how much of this thing you've actually crafted, or if it was just, I got a cool idea and I just pumped it into ChatGPT and saw what came out, and then I just published that.
Why does your brain go there though? Because think about how many people, like me, for instance, I can do music, I can do writing, I can't do anything related to visual arts. You know, there are a lot of artists that can only really do one lane. So I wouldn't think it, like, you shouldn't immediately jump to like, oh well, if there's one thing AI generated, then like everything must be. Because I think if you want to make a comic book, like most likely you're a writer, you know, but not every writer is also an illustrator, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's not like jumping assuming it is. It's just I'm doubting what else you've done. You know, I'm not assuming you have. I'm just saying they might have. If they're willing to use it for this, then they're willing to use it for writing. I don't know where the moral grounds stand. It's fine if it's proof of concept or whatever, but I don't know. I have a lot more respect, even if it was like a super simplified concept, like, or piece of artwork. I that's fine by me. If it's super low quality, at least I go, like, someone put, like, you know, time and effort into the, you know,
but
art.
That's
for this,
not very marketable, you know,
quality.
Is it?
Like, I don't think AI art is marketable.
But okay, so I put a lot of time into that shitty AI art, but like to make sure that it didn't look immediately like AI. I don't think if I told you and I said, "Hey, I found some guy on Fiverr to draw this comic for me," I think you would have believed me.
I 100% would not have believed you. I 100% would not have believed you. It only takes a second of looking at it for more than.
So, you know, what about those images was standing out?
The faces
out to
were
you?
Fucked. The anatomy was wrong. The perspective was strange. Cum was kind of blending into the background a little
Explain
bit.
That.
Sorry, the word. Sorry, cum. The word cum was blending into the digital pad a little bit. There's just like it's. I mean, this wouldn't be everybody. This is just me because I'm a visual person. I can look at that and immediately go like, okay, yeah, this was a prompt. Like it just feels off. It looks off at everything about it. There's just, everything is uncanny.
And it took a long time to even get there. It took me, 5 hours of feeding it reference and basically repeating myself over and over and over and over again for it to even get to that point. And there's so many things that it will not do because of the restrictions. It's not feasible to make a comic through AI. I've learned this. It's not feasible, but I think it will be someday. So I think it's a conversation worth having.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. If you think about like AI, all of these tools that people are using to make art and to make music or whatever, like it really is just like one big scam. It's like it's basically just taking all the entire history of like musical output, human musical output, human visual art output, putting it into a fucking supercomputer. You get to type a prompt in and then it spits out something that, based on all of those millions of other pieces of art, makes something that kind of replicates or emulates that. So it's just like, it is, you know, a tool that steals from people's creative labor and you know, just everything that comes from inside of them to make something that is, you know, at the end of the day,
it's inhuman and soulless.
Yeah. So like, I totally get it. Trust me. Like, I am not in support of it, but at the same time, it's like, these tools are here and they're not going away. So if they can help someone like Nick do something that he's wanted to do for a long time, like, I support that, you know, because it's like, I don't know, there's no way that this stuff is ever going to go away. It's only going to get better, which is going to make it worse by extension for people that actually do this kind of stuff. So it's like, it's just fighting against the tide, man. You know, like it's
impossible. That's the hard part is like there all these artists and so many people are like so vitriolically against it, and like the people who take a stand against it are going to be the people that are behind the curve, because regardless of whether you want those types of things to be successful, somebody is going to use it and become successful off of it, and you're just going to have missed that wave, which fucking sucks and is really shitty to say, but it's the truth.
But yeah. I don't want to use it. It's not that I am against it, but also I wouldn't be jealous.
I'm not even saying I would want to use it. I'm saying somebody is going to use it and they're going to become massively successful with it. And that's like, you're seeing it right now with like TikTok shorts and YouTube shorts and shit, where people are just having an AI generate a script and read it and then just throw in some really shitty pictures behind it. Like, and that shit gets millions and millions of views. Like, and it's going to be the same thing for music. It's going to be the same thing for everything eventually.
It's a little different for that, because that doesn't really, like, I'm more talking on the moral and questionable topic of quote-unquote AI art, whereas, like, that's just slop. Like, if you're just typing in a prompt and getting shit to make a TikTok short where it's like, you won't believe how many boobs this woman had. Top but five. That's like phase... sure, that's going to be successful, but like, who cares? I don't care if that's successful.
That's phase one MCU, bro.
I'm just saying that's like it's like the America's Got Talent videos where they have like, poor Nigerian boy with three heads sings amazingly, makes Simon Cowell cry, and it gets 15 million views. I don't care if that's successful. It's not art. They're not making art. They're just making slop for people. I don't think people will be successful in truly crafting, because to make art, you have to take a part of yourself and put it out there. And the people that are typing prompts aren't doing that.
I agree with you, but I think a lot of people don't look at art the same way you look at art. And a lot of people can really like something regardless of whether you think it has a soul or not.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good example of this, and we're going to, I think as you're alluding to, Nick, we're going to see more and more of this, is BBL Drizzy. BBL Drizzy is the first, like, major global AI smash hit song, you know, because it was, BBL Drizzy was just, like, some comedian asking the AI to make a song about Drake having a fake ass, and because of some beef, Metro Boomin took that sample and made a probably the most famous and like played instrumental of 2024 that everybody fucking was rapping over and just playing as an instrumental. And I think stuff like that is going to continue to happen. I bet if you asked like 90% of people if they knew like where BBL Drizzy originated from, they would just be like, oh yeah, Metro Boomin made it, or not even know who it came from because it was so ubiquitous. But like, that was an AI song that like some producer just put a trap beat over. That's all it took. You know, we're going to see more and more of that, which I think it sucks. It fucking really does suck, because in an ideal world, AI would be used to take away all the aspects of human labor that humans don't enjoy doing, you know, like
but construction. Unfortunately, it's not going to be used for that.
Yeah. Now it's used to decimate the human creativity. Yeah.
And also decimate, you know, wildlife and carbon usage.
Yeah. And I mean, my job was I lost my job. The entire industry I was working in was decimated by AI before even like just like 2 years ago. Like right when ChatGPT came out, the copywriting stuff that I was doing was like, you know, all the companies I was working for were just like, yeah, we'll just have a fucking computer do it for free, you know? So that really sucked. And
yeah. Yeah. And it's a problem, because like AI is not going to be used for, like you said, anything to benefit humans as a species. No, I'm not saying it won't. I'm saying so far it hasn't really. There's been like one example of like breast cancer imaging used for AI. I'm like, that's great. But the current flood of AI, all I'm seeing is just kind of just soulless, hey, look at this funny image I made of Trump as a baby. And that's fine, whatever. But I don't know. I don't even know where I was going with that. I just got sidetracked by Trump on a baby.
Well, I think the answer to it is like stuff. Did you guys ever see the sad Biden shit I made on my my channel? Like, I think doing stuff like that, where like me and my friend, you know, the only AI that's used for that is I wrote a you know, I used Joe Biden's voice to make a script about him being sad and like looking back on his life. And it's fun, you know, it's funny and it's sad or whatever. But we, you know, we animated stuff. We you know, put clips together. I did music for it. It's like using AI as a tool to enhance your own work. Like, I think that is the real way to be doing this, you know, to like stuff like that.
I think the ideal usage, like you're talking about, it's never going to be the case. Like we're saying, yeah, it's so great. It sucks because I'm against pretty much what I'm doing myself, what I was trying to do myself. Like, I don't think it's necessarily good because it sets a bad precedent. Because my stance is basically, if AI is taking away jobs from people that like in an art, and especially in like an artistic field, like if nobody's making backgrounds in Unreal anymore, or drawing handmade backgrounds for movies, and they are all just being AI generated, I think that's work that should be done by humans. But it's not going to be the case. Someday it's going to take over, and it sucks. And it's just like the same as like the way the government's ran. Like, we have no control over it. Like, we can't stop it, do anything about it.
Well, I think there's a utopian version of this where AI does all the shit that humans don't want to do. But in this, of course, like in a world where everything only gets worse and everything sucks constantly, of course, our AI in this horrible timeline would be doing the stuff that people want to be doing in their free time, you know?
Yeah.
Fucking sucks. Yeah. But like, you know, it will get to a point, you know, it's not going to stop. Like, have you guys ever seen those videos that compare like the very first like DALL-E, Will Smith eating spaghetti AI videos that came out in like 2021?
Yeah, it's going rapidly.
Yeah, versus what you know, what's the big one? Midjourney, like whatever that can do now. It's like, it's unreal. And that's just 4 years. Like, imagine what it's going to be like in 30. There will be AI like running all of the construction sites in New York City, just 3D printing fucking entire skyscrapers. So that's a world that I could get behind, but we would have to reconfigure our entire economy to support people that aren't working.
I don't think capitalism, you know, really works.
It's funny because this whole concept is exactly what my script is about.
Yeah, I was going to mention
my comic.
Yeah. Yeah. AI would work in a utopia. I can see that totally working, but unfortunately we have a system of government that is designed not to do that and to punish the lower class, and this is only just going to make that cap worse.
Yeah, just like imagine every citizen was kind of allotted a specific, there'd be like a stipend that you get from both the government and private industry that replaces whatever income you had before the AI revolution, industrial revolution.
No, they'd call that communism, you know? So that's not allowed.
Yeah, of
or course. Socialism or whatever.
He's just talking about my script, everybody.
Is that in your script?
Yeah, just humans just live off of like universal income, and they don't have to work because the AI
robots
does everything.
Are second class citizens.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no other way to do it. It would have to be something like that, because what do you do? Like, it's just crazy because like our entire society, people are valued by what jobs that they have. Everyone asks you, the first thing they ask you, what do you do for a living? When you don't do anything for a living, like, what is your value in society? Like, I think a lot of people would go fucking insane in a world like this. Like, growing up in this kind of world for 60 years or whatever, and then all of that stripped away from you, like, a lot of people are going to fucking go buck wild.
It's devastating.
You know? I think humans would be fine living in excess. I think over the course of time and just...
Eventually,
be just normalized.
No, yeah, of course, eventually. But it's like, it's an indoctrination that there would need to be, like... People centuries from now that don't know what it's like to live under capitalism, where everybody works for everything they have, you know, like, I don't know if you just take that away from someone, from some guy who like worked in a coal mine for 65 years, and then tomorrow you tell him like, actually AI is going to be doing this job and we're just going to pay your salary or whatever. I think a lot of those people would go nuts, you know. Because their whole identity is wrapped up in their job. Their whole, everything they do, the fucking 85% of their waking life is spent on that job. And when that's not a necessity in their life, that's not something that they have to do anymore, like, they're going to fucking lose their shit. A lot of people will.
Maybe. This is literally, this is weird that we're having this discussion, but.
I think it's a good discussion.
No, because I've thought about it so much, because it's literally the whole concept of my thing. But it's. But yeah, I don't think that that's necessarily the case. I think you tell those people, we're paying you the exact same amount, you just don't have to go to work. I think they might have some culture shock for a little bit, but I think most people would be able to get behind it.
I think it's different if it's like your stipend, you get, you know, $4,000 a month or whatever. And also hopefully they're living in an economy where that actually can afford something. But yeah. Realistically, it's like, no, hey, you don't have to work that job anymore. You know why? Because AI took it. And also you're out of job. Good luck.
That's how it is right now, but it would have to change. They would have to change it. But it would have to, AI would have to take up enough jobs for that to have to be an argument.
Yeah.
No, but like, so this is how I'm thinking of it, Nick, because it's like, it's not even just what do you do with your time anymore. Like, that's a huge part of it. Like, a lot, in order for that change to be smooth in your life, you would already need to have like a lot of hobbies or passions outside of your work, which not everybody does. You know, a lot of people just like go on a vacation once every, you know, 50 weeks or whatever, and then just like watch TV. You know, like that's, if you take away the work element from that workaholic lifestyle, like there is just nothing. It's like a black
void. But the entire thing, but them going crazy, those types of people going crazy is good, because if this type of thing happened, the entire government's like interest would be towards like depopulating the earth and lowering birth rates, because they want to have less people that they have to control. So those people going crazy, maybe dying early, like, is a good thing in the government's eyes.
Oh, I thought you
they don't want to have to pay.
I thought you were gonna say in my eyes.
No, like,
eyes, that's great.
No, they want people to be docile. They want people to just basically like not worry anymore. Like they want to be able, because if you're in a country where like everybody just kind of lives in excess, does whatever they fucking want, the government can also just do whatever the fuck they want, and people don't care. So I mean, it's a win-win for them, even if people do go crazy for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think this is something that we'll necessarily have to worry about in our lifetimes.
I don't think we'll see it in our lifetime, yeah.
But
yeah.
I think we'll be, like, by the time we're getting up there in age, like we're 70s or 80s, like millennials and zoomers and shit, I think there might be, like, that kind of shift that starts to take place. I don't know. I guess we'll see. But or we won't see. We'll be dead. Or
America will fall apart.
We'll be dead, or maybe fucking Yosemite or Yellowstone will erupt.
Super volcano.
Yeah, super volcanoes. Rick and Morty type shit.
Hopefully I'm far enough away from that.
Yeah. All right, well, what movie are we going to talk about next week?
Oh, yeah. It's Mr. VHS Nicular's pick.
I'm going to give y'all two options. Both of them are multiple movies, so y'all are going to have to just deal with it.
How many is multiple?
One is two, one is three.
Two. Okay. Let's go with the two.
Well, hold on. Hold your horses, little man. So, all right. So one option is going to be the two movies, and it's going to be Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle by Stephen Chow. Okay. And then the other one will be, if we want to continue the zombie trend, and if y'all want to extend y'all's zombie knowledge, we're going to do Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, and Day of the Dead by George Romero.
The original?
So the trilogy. Oh, which those are pretty cool, but those are pretty
these
cool.
These are the old
goes,
ones, right? 70s?
Yeah, it 60s? Goes from the 60s to the 80s. So it's like every 10 years, he basically released a zombie movie, and
honestly,
they're all very different.
Nick, I don't know if you'd like Shaolin Soccer, because it's kind of like a goofy, silly movie.
Have you seen it?
No, I've just seen, I've heard
Shaolin
Soccer is
cool.
It is, and I'm not sure
I
if
love
you'd
it.
Like it.
It's not like a it's not like a Psycho
PG,
Gorman.
Psycho Gorman. That's what I was
it's
thinking.
Not like a Psycho Gorman situation. There's a lot of things you can talk about in those movies.
Okay, yeah, I remember seeing like a trailer for that a while ago, and I wasn't like totally put off by it or anything. So I would go with the Shaolin Soccer one.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, so Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle will be the movies for next
awesome.
Next week.
Who are the directors?
They're both Stephen Chow.
Okay, I got it. Okay, all right. I think we are wrapping up here. So. If you don't want to be spoiled, next episode for Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle by Stephen Chow, make sure to watch them for next episode. If you are watching this on YouTube and you're enjoying it, please leave us a like and a comment. We love seeing those. And if you're listening to this on any of our audio platforms, such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts, please leave us a 5-star review, because that also helps out a ton. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And get Stuckmanized.
Get Stuckmanized.
Get Stuckmanized.